Someone thought I suggested this topic, or I'm discussing this topic as I'm leading up to my trip to Morocco to deal with all the questions I might experience in flight. That's not where it came from, actually, though it's important to know those halachas anyways. I'm still waiting for my flight to Morocco. The individual hasn't yet booked it. He told me the minute he does, he'll let me know, and then I'll hopefully book mine, and along with a few who are going to join me. But the reason why this I chose this topic is because the other day I received a message from someone through WhatsApp. And he said, hi, Rabbi, I'm on a plane right now. And they just, I got bumped up to business class, first class, and I asked for a coffee, and they gave me a coffee in a mug, and can I drink it? It's in a mug. Maybe the mug is a treif mug. So whenever it comes to halachas, questions in coffee, I completely blank out. I have a mental block on it because I don't drink coffee. My parents love coffee. My parents have two different coffee machines in the house because they each like it their own way. So I did not inherit that Indian of liking coffee. So I don't know anything about coffee at all. And I could be asked the same question about coffee, and each time I don't remember the answer. I look it up what the answer is. So I'm like, wait a second, forget the mug. Is the coffee even kosher? He said, no, of course it's kosher because it's not flavored, but maybe they have flavored coffee they mix it together with. I really don't know anything about coffee. So that's why I wanted to discuss this topic about coffee on the plane and use this as a springboard to discuss other questions that relate to kosher food on airplanes. There are many. Maybe I'll do a series on questions involving travel, but at least in the area of food, as it relates to airplanes, there are many questions that do arise. So aside from the question of coffee, whether the coffee is kosher, whether it could use the mug, is there a problem of bishul akum when the stewardess makes a coffee for you? What about mizonos bread? They serve mizonos bread on some flights. What about the questions, is it a good hashkacha? I'm not going to question what's a good hashkacha, what's not. People try to ask me all the time, is this a good hashkacha, not a good hashkacha? I just send them to the CRC website. That's the reason why when I opened up the women's halacha chat, I made sure it was filtered. That while those are on the men's halacha chat, everyone could ask questions whoever they want. But the women's chat, I put a filter. Only if you go through the administrators could you ask questions, because I was concerned they're going to go down Trader Joe's and take a picture of every single hashkacha and say, is this good, is that good, is that good? So I'm not answering any questions like that. What's a good hashkacha, what's not? If you want to know, a good friend of ours, Rabbi Ari Leibowitz from Teaneck, originally from Shalvim now, the other Rabbi Ari Leibowitz, so he happened to give a shir recently that was featured on YU Torah about the differences between Mahajin and Rabbanut in Eretz Yisrael, so that might be relevant as well. Take a look there if you'd like to understand that, but that's not what we're going to talk about. What other questions could come up on a plane relating to food? If the food is wrapped or unwrapped, the question of unwrapped food, it's a common occurrence. We'll get there as well, and then just go through a series of different things. Questions of washing hands could come up. Washing hands in the Tilis Adayim in the bathroom or outside the bathroom, how one accomplishes that. Mayim Achronim, these are things that came up with that might arise on the flight. Now, this is in addition to many other questions that can come up, which again we'll save for other times. Tfilas Aderech, sitting next to the opposite gender, causing the whole flight to be delayed for 5 hours, getting thrown off the flight. Those are sure interesting questions related to that. Another interesting question comes up is having food underneath the seat where a person falls asleep. There's a violation of eating food that was underneath someone who slept under a bed. Maybe we'll save that maybe for next week or something. The timing of how to daven, when to daven, based on the sunset, based on the matrices. What about international dateline? That's a big question which your head could spin just trying to figure out what exactly goes on there. Standing up, sitting down, davening, Shemoneh Esrei, putting Talis Tefillin on in front of other people, davening in the airport, sukkah, eating outside of sukkah, lighting Hanukkah candles. These are just a few of many, many questions that do come up when flying on an airplane and related to travel. So we're going to focus on just the food. So let's start with the question of coffee.
The first few things that you talked about, food, apply to hotels.
For sure, yeah. For 100%. These could apply to hotels and other restaurants of getting coffee elsewhere. I'm going to try to focus on the airplanes, but you're right, you can apply it elsewhere too. So let's talk about coffee for a second. So again, me not knowing anything about coffee at all. So is the coffee going to be kosher? So I have a few people I call for like immediate answers when I don't know the answer. And this was somewhat immediate. The guy could have lived without coffee. It wasn't like urgent. But I felt bad. So I tried leaving the guy a voice note. Apparently voice notes don't go through the airplanes and WhatsApp. So I had to text all the stuff. So I reached out to Rabbi Ari Leibowitz, a good friend of mine, the one in North Woodmere here, and he told me it's understood that on planes they only serve black coffee. No flavored coffee on planes. That's apparently what's been accepted. I spoke to a close friend, Rabbi Gersten from the OU, who's a tremendous Talmud Chacham and Posek, who also confirmed this as well, that it's understood that on planes they only have black coffee, and the food, it's completely kosher as long as they don't put anything else in it. So there's no problem with the coffee itself. But what about the mug? What's the issue with the mug? So now, there are a few factors when it comes to the mug. So seemingly, they don't put anything else in the mug other than coffee. What else are they serving in the first class here? So it could be. So it could be.
They always give you paper.
Okay. Okay.
Not for the best of
mentions. So
we're in first class over here.
Okay.
Yeah. They give them.
Yeah. 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 This guy got a mug.
I would know.
Okay. So anyway, so that a mug. So only thing that's used for a mug. Okay. Coffee could be tea. Maybe tea is also going to be kosher as well. So what else? So it might be. Most likely, whatever was placed in this mug is going to be kosher as well. So there's nothing treif about the mug itself. What?
Flavored teas are kosher.
I'm not sure about all. What they have flavored teas on the flights?
I don't drink tea.
Okay. You know, I don't drink coffee. Okay. I only drink kosher tea. So I don't know what they have. So there could be a concern maybe of a flavored tea that maybe is treif. I doubt it will be treif when it comes to flavored tea, but I really don't know. What about, you know, in the kitchens, even in first-class kitchens, they're very small. So whatever treif they have back there, whatever they're serving, it's very possible that things get very tight and you can mix up different pig or whatever other treif food that they have. It can get mixed together. Then when they wash it, I assume they wash the mug, so they wash it with other utensils as well, whatever they're serving in first class. So that too is going to create some situations of treif being mixed together with the coffee. So the coffee mugs. So that too is really not so much of a concern, because let's say there's a klal we have when it comes to kalim. The only time a utensil is going to treif up what I'm eating is if it's what's called ben yoman, within 24 hours. So if I, let's say for our case, I used a milchik pot, and then 2 hours later I'm using it for fleishiks, so then that's going to be able to transfer the milk into the food that I'm eating. But let's say that pot was hadn't been used for fleishiks in 24 hours. It's eino ben yoman. So if I make something in that pot, so that food actually won't become treif if that pot is old. The fleishik, let's be clear, I'm using a chillin pot, I'm making milk, I'm making macaroni and cheese in my chillin pot. So that chillin pot had not been used in 24 hours. If I accidentally used it, my food will actually be fine. Because the food of the chillin pot hadn't been used in 24 hours, that tom that's there is old, it's bad, it doesn't give any good taste to it. So the food is good, I have to just kosher the fleishik pot. Because now it has a mixture of milchiks and fleishiks, and even though all that taste is all old, we have to kosher. But the food itself is actually good. So let's say you don't know the status of your kalim. You have no idea when it was last used. So the halacha is, we could assume that it had not been used in the past 24 hours. Unless you know, you have the assumption is it had not been used in the past 24 hours. Stam kalim einam b'nei yomam. Stam kalim that I don't know anything better about, I could assume it had not been used for the past 24 hours. In addition to, when it was, let's say, put in the dishwasher, I don't know how they clean things on the airplane, but when you clean something in the same sink, you're not supposed to clean fleishiks and milk together, because that's the problem. But let's say it was done anyways. So you put soap in, you put detergent, you put whatever you're using. So any soap that's there also happens to make it detergent. It's called nosein tam lefgam. The only time something tastes can ask for something else, if it's good, if it tastes good. But the moment it doesn't taste good anymore, if I, let's say, make rice and happen to find bugs in there, so obviously you can't eat bugs, but if I, let's say, sift it out, so I remove all the bugs, so there's no violation of eating bugs, so I took them all out. Is my rice going to be usser? My rice won't be usser now. Because since bugs don't give any good taste to the rice, it's called nosein tam lefgam, and therefore it won't be usser to eat the rice. So here as well, even if you mix together the mugs in the dishwasher, and since there's detergent there, there are other reasons to be makel as well. So in the end of the day, one should request, the halacha is you should request for coffee. If you know, this guy never sits in first class before, so he didn't know they were going to serve him in the mug. If you know beforehand, say, can I have coffee in a paper cup? That's ideal. This guy was given it in a mug. He said to the lady, could you please put it in a paper cup? So she came back with a paper cup of coffee. But he wasn't sure if it was the same exact coffee she just spilled in the paper cup or it was a new coffee. He didn't want to ask her a second time, could you spill this out and get me a new cup? So the halach is based on all these kulas that it's very possible that a mug itself would be permitted. It's best in that case to just pour it out into the paper cup and most likely it would be fine. And that's a psak I got from Rabbi Leibowitz and Rabbi Gerson. That's how they understood the situation.
So do you have in the mug the same coffee, it's better to put in a paper cup and then drink it out of a paper cup?
It's better, even though you probably at that point could drink it in the mug because nothing has happened. It doesn't seem right to eat a drink out of the mug. That's okay. It could be, I'm not sure, Maris Ayin, it's just a better practice, but really Mikra Din, it's probably fine to drink it from the mug itself. In that case, now don't expand this to other cases of hotels, they use that mug for who knows what else they're putting in the mugs, and there's more trafe that taking place there. What?
What else are they putting in mugs?
Who knows? If you have a fancy restaurant, you have no idea what else they're going to put in.
Soup and cheese?
I don't know. Pig milk? I'm not sure. I'm not sure what. The glass would be the same thing as the mug. Same thing, yeah. Okay. So now let's move on to a question of whether or not there's a violation of Bishul Akum. Are they allowed to make the coffee for you in the first place? So when it comes to Bishul Akum, in order to be a violation of Bishul Akum, there are two factors that are necessary. The food has to be something that is nechal, eino nechachal, that's not eaten raw, eino nechachal, chai. If it is eaten raw, and then they cook it, that's not a problem of bishul akum. So let's say for water, for example. Water, people drink it when it's chai, when it's raw, and you also drink it when it's boiled, when it's hot, in tea or coffee. So water is not subject to bishul akum because it's nechachal, chai. It can be eaten raw, and the change that the akum does is not that significant. Or baked apples, let's say. I take apples baked might be different, but apples are eaten raw, and they're also eaten baked. So there, anything that's eaten raw is not subject to bishul akum.
What about sushi?
Sushi is another topic. I don't want to deal with that right now, but it's a different question. So then, let's say another factor is also has to be olal shulchan malachim, has to be served on a king's table, that a king would actually eat this. That's another factor. But something, let's say, I don't know, a good example, popcorn. So popcorn is cooked, it's baked, it's popped. So people don't serve popcorn at weddings, at fancy meals necessarily. So therefore, that's not subject to olal shulchan malachim, and therefore not the violation of bishul akum. Again, to violate bishul akum has to be something that's not eaten raw. You have to have it cooked to make it edible, and it's served on the table of kings. L'chaura, coffee is served on king's tables. It's something that everyone has, even at fanciest restaurants and weddings they have this. And also, coffee is not eaten raw. So you would think it's a problem of bishul akum, because you don't eat coffee raw. And it serves on Shulchan Malachim. How could the stewardess make the coffee for you in the back of the kitchen in the on the airplane? So the Pri Chadash addresses this question. So if you take a look inside at number one, Pri Chadash says as follows. If you read just the bold, he's developing the background here. This is a completely side topic here. There's a discussion the Gemara brought down in Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to have beer. You can't drink beer with goyim. Not to drink beer with goyim. You can't eat in their taverns and their bars and their lounges. There's an isser. That's a problem of intermingling with them and leading to getting married. You cannot have any beer with them. Now, again, this is as a side point. The halacha is the Gemara says sheicher tamarim. Date-based beer is the only thing that's a problem of that. But if it's based, it's hops, a barley, so then you would be allowed to. So that's how the Ramah comes out. You're allowed to have go drink in a cafe, in a bar, in a lounge, if you're having beer, our modern-day beer. But that being said, most poskim, the Chaya Adam is very, very strong about this. He thinks any alcoholic beverage would be subject to this violation of drinking with the goyim. There's a whole other kind of discussion to have here, whether one's allowed to go to a lounge and have such types of drinks. So in that context, he discusses, what about coffee? Is coffee also a violation of intermingling, sitting down at a cafe, having coffee? So he talks about whether that's a problem or not a problem, but what about bishul akum? So the Pri Chadash says, he says as follows, quoting, looking at just the bold, he says, L'das Rambam. The Rambam says, Val pize mutter lishos ha-kafi, the coffee. You're allowed to drink the coffee bebeis akum. He thinks you are allowed to drink the coffee in a non-kosher cafe. Why, he's talking about the question of the bishul akum problem. Even though coffee is not eaten or no one drinks it when it's raw, it needs to be cooked. If it olal shulchan melachim, it's also served at the tables of kings. Jumping down a few lines to the next bowl, the kiheicha de batel hapri legavi hamayim leinin bracha. What bracha do you say on coffee? The beans are adama, right? The coffee beans that grow from the ground, that would be an adama. They don't grow from the ground, the trees. So ha'etz, they should be ha'etz. So then the ha'etz, you should say, but we say a shahako. Why? Because the tam is batel. The water of the coffee is the main ingredient, and therefore one would say a shahako. Says the Pichadash, so too, the halum of archinan alayu el shahakol, hachanami batel le'inin iser bishul. When it comes to bishul akum, that even though the coffee beans themselves are bishul akum, since most of it is water, the water is mevatel the bishul akum, water is not subject to bishul akum, and therefore it's permitted legabe bishul akum. The taste might be, but in terms of the major ingredient, the water would seem to be the roof. You are making a very good point, because when it comes to bittel, the loch is things that have tam taste actually are not subject to real bittel. But this is not really so. It's a good point. He doesn't address this, but again, he felt that the water, nonetheless, the water is still considered the main ingredient, at least lagabe bishul akum. It could be regarding other isurim. Let's say the beans were, I don't know, had treif in it. Real treif, not bishakum, treif deraisa. So then he may not say bittel would work. But since bishakum is midirabanam, he felt you go based on the majority of the ingredient, which is water, and therefore allowed. This actually came up in the chat last week. Someone had asked me the following question. They asked me about, let's say, I don't know why this had happened, but they forgot to turn the chillin pot on for Shabbos. And now it's Bein HaShemashos, after Shkia, before Tzeis. He wanted to know whether or not you could have a goy plug the chillin pot on, turn it on. So I said, well, legabe amir la'akum, hilchos Shabbos, you would be allowed to. Because there's a halacha, Bein HaShemashos, amir la'akum is permitted, if there's a mitzvah purpose. Right? On Shabbos itself, you can't do amir la'akum. But Bein HaShemashos, there's a heter, you could tell a goy to plug it in for a tzarech mitzvah. So legabe Shabbos, you're allowed to. Bein HaShemashos. But said the problem is legabe bishul akum, who made that chulin? The goy just made the chulin, and therefore when they plug it in, it's a problem of bishul akum, and then that you're not allowed to eat. So the person asked me, what if you mix it together? So I said, if there's going to be rove of cooked food in the chulin, I don't know how you accomplish that, but let's say you take you're making some chicken, you put the chicken somehow more chicken than the chulin in the chulin pot, and then the goy turns it on. So then we could apply this pichadash that if most of it is already cooked, that lechora might be able to be mevatel the chulin. But I think it's only true if it's mixed very well. It's not a very, very good eitzah. I'll tell you the good eitzah to do, though.
Just a question on that. Doesn't it have to be cooked regardless of this 30% cooked to even put it on at that point? So can you rely on that? You can't put it on uncooked in Be'ez HaShemashos.
In terms of shihiyah and stuff. Yeah. So if you do it, remember right before Shabbos. Remember the Gemara said right before Shabbos, you put it in the meat that won't be ready. So then the person's a mesiach daito from it. It's not a concern of shihiyah at that point. But so what's the eitzah to do?
It's not
the makabim. Then this was not cooked at all.
Right. So we rely on that.
That was his question.
No, sorry.
So makabim is not a problem.
No, it is. But let's say the Gemara says, let's say
you can't use it Friday.
You drop in a piece of meat right before Shabbos, which takes time to make.
Right.
Then even though the food's not Michael ben Jusa yet, since I won't have it right away, it's a raw piece of meat. It's going to take some time. The Gemara says I'm mesich daito from it, and there's no chashash of shia.
We pass them like that today.
Yeah. So what's the eitzah? The eitzah is as follows. I heard this from, I think, Rav Fisher once gave this eitzah from Toronto, that there was a big Shabbaton, and they forgot to plug in the chillin pots for the Shabbaton. So he had this shayla, what to do? So the Hilchos Shabbos, you could tell the goy to do this, but Bein HaShemashos, it's allowed, but how do you get around the Bishul Akum problem? So there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that says, let's say some goy had set a swamp on fire. That's what the Gemara says. A whole swamp was set on fire. And in the swamp, there were grasshoppers. And we know certain grasshoppers are permitted. Nowadays, we don't know which ones, but mikadin, grasshoppers are allowed to be eaten, if you know the simanim. The Gemara and Chulim talk about this. So are you allowed to eat the grasshoppers that were now killed because that was cooked by the goy? And the Gemara says that you're allowed to, because since the goy did not have intent on cooking the grasshoppers, his intent was to burn the swamp, so you're allowed to, because it didn't have kavanah for it. So what did Rav Fisher say to do in this situation? He said, have the guy turn off the electricity in the building. Shut the electricity off. Have a Jew plug back in the chillin' pot while the electricity is off. Hasn't done anything. And then have the guy turn it back on. He turns on the fire. He lit up the swamp. He burned the swamp in essence, turned the electricity on. Mimela happens to be the chillin' pot was cooked. That's not called Bishul Akum, and therefore you come around the Amir L'Akum problem, and you get around the problem of a Bishul Akum. That would be the eight to eat such a such food.
Is there a Amir L'Akum problem telling him to turn off the lights?
No, because it's banished mashos.
But that's sorry,
it is, because for you, it's in order to get to that point of, yeah, exactly. Okay, so that was the eight. So either way, we see from all this that there is no Bishul Akum problem when it comes to coffee in general, and therefore one is allowed to drink the coffee on an airplane. You might want to know, I mean, I was doing some research on this, so I came across an interesting article. It's entitled, Airplane Coffee or Tea, Is It Safe to Drink? So this whole article about the water that's used on airplanes, the bacteria that sits in the airplane, so you might want to think twice about having coffee. I could send you the article if you'd like. I don't know if this is fake news trying to bring down some billion-dollar companies and stuff like that, but supposedly there's some issues with the water that's being served on a plane, which of course goes into your coffee and your tea. That's a eta. What? I don't know. How much it gets boiled, but I'm not sure if I want to have that water even after it's been boiled. But I'm not sure. I'm just saying, take a look. I came across the article. I don't know the validity of it. I don't know the proven the science behind it. But think twice and read this article before you take your coffee. But mitzad halacha, it's completely permitted. Okay, so now let's talk about another question that comes up: mizonos bread. Sometimes they serve on the flights a piece of bread that says mizonos. Or not only that, they have other items that they sell in stores that say mizonos bread. It looks like bread, it tastes like bread, but they say mizonos. So what's the story with that? There's a story of Aaron Lichtenstein from Gush Zatzal. So he was a very humble individual. He carried himself as a very humble individual. I remember the first time I met him, I was learning in YU, my first year there, in First Hall. And I get an old man comes and taps me behind the shoulder and asks me where the Yushalmi is. So I stood up out of respect for him, but I had no idea who he was. He didn't look like a rabbi. He was just looked like a regular person. So there's a story about him once on the flight to Israel, from Israel, and he gets up to wash, and the stewardess says, "You don't have to wash. This is a mizonos bread." He says, I want to anyways. Going back and forth, and she says, "Okay, go wash, but you really don't have to. When you get home, ask your rabbi about that, okay?" So clearly it's not so pasha that one does say mizonos on mizonos bread. So let's take a look at number two here. It's a discussion of a pas haba b'kissin. Pas haba b'kissin is a type of bread that we treat as mizonos. So what the Shulchan Aruch writes in number two, ha-pas haba b'kissin is mivarech alam bori mine mizonos. So let's take, for example, a pretzel. Pretzel is a great example, a cake. These are pas haba b'kissins. One would say mizonos on them, and then afterwards he would say baruch, the brach of achas mein shalosh. He would say an al michi when he finishes. And if he eats an amount of a shear that other people are koveya suda, then you would actually say a motzi and benching. That's always a big question. How does one define what the shear is? Of how many pretzels, how many slices of cake do you have to have to be koveya suda? That's not for now, but that's a discussion. He goes on to say, this is an interesting trivia question. When would there be a possibility where you would say mizonos? We know like rice is unique. You say mizonos and bori nefashos. When would you say mizonos and benching at the end? When would that be a case? So the Shulchan Aruch says, let's say I decide to have one pretzel. So I say mizonos. But let's say I get really hungry. I decide to have, 50 pretzels, which is, let's say, kviya suda on a pretzel. So then I would have to bench after the fact. That would be a case where it starts off with a mizonos and you would end off with a hamotzi, benching rather. So what exactly is a pas haba b'kissin? So there are three different categories of pas haba b'kissin. So let's take a look, continuing in this paragraph, the next, number two, Siv Zayin. Pas haba b'kissin, there are three shitas. Yesh mefarshim, there are those who hold. Pas she'osui kimin kisim, it's like a little pocket. Shemimalin osam devash, you fill up with honey, o sukar, or sugar, or gozim, a shkedim, a tavlin, some type of nuts. It's a pie. A pie is the first definition. A fruit-filled or sweet-filled pie is one definition of pas haba b'kissin. The third one, I'm going to skip to the third one. I'll get back to the second one in just a second. The third one I'll say outside is the crackers, things that are very that break, like crackers and pretzels. thin and crunchy. That's a third category. And the second and middle category is a cake, dough, sweet dough. So look how the Shulchan Aruch writes, if you just look at the bold. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Yesh omrim shehi isa, it's a type of dough, she'ira badvash o shemen o chalav o mine tavlin vafa. You know, there's bread that's based on water. How do you make bread? You put water and flour and eggs maybe and sugar, but it's usually based with water. And if you add some milk, you add some honey, you add some sugar to it, and then you bake it. So then, if you can nikar be'isar, if you could taste it a little bit, the little sweetness in the bread, says the Shulchan Aruch, that would be considered a mizonos. If it's a little sweet, that's how Svardim assume. But v'yeshomer, there are those who say, no, shezet nikra pas gomer, a little bit of honey, a little bit of sugar, that's bread. What's considered possible b'kissin for the Ramah? Is the Ramah speaking now? Elim kein yesh bem harbe tavlin. You need a lot of spices or sugar or dvash. Kimina misika shekarin lakich shekimat hadvash v'tavlin ha'ikr. Until it's the ikr is really the sweetness. So cake, a classic cake, even though there's flour and water in it, most of it's going to be sugar. So when you taste it, a very sweet bread, that's cake. That's a mizonos. But to have bread. It has a little bit of sweetness in there, a little bit of sugar, a little bit of honey, that the Ramah clearly says would be considered bread and would be considered hamotzi. So that's the machlokas. So in the end of the day, these mizonos breads, for the Svardim lechor would have to say mizonos. If there's a little bit of sweetness where you could taste the apple juice, you have to have motzi on it, that'd be mizonos for the Svardim. If you have a little bit of sweetness for the Svardim, and you taste the apple juice a little bit, that would be mizonos for the Svardim. For the Ashkenazim, it would have to be more of a cake to be considered mizonos. But if it's less than that, that's not considered a mizonos.
So the Svardim, based on the challahs that we buy in our neighborhood, they wouldn't be able to make a hamotzi on?
Correct. Very likely. Yeah, I have to ask, I don't know, I have to ask Eitan, but... Why? Water, no, exactly, just water challah, right? Yeah, exactly.
So anybody that would say this tastes like cake is a challah.
Exactly, yeah. So in my house, I asked her to my house making any bread with the sugar on top. You know, make the sugar. I said, that's not bread. Even though it might be really hamotzi, that's not bread. We want bread that's for challah, it's really, really bread. So it's even...
Is there not a time requirement of eating the appropriate amount of gazayas of bread that you would need to bench?
Yeah, sure, that's a different topic, though. But yeah, that's a shear.
So if you eat enough... If you started off with the idea of eating, like you said beforehand, a little bit of pretzels.
I don't want to get involved in Kviya Suda right now. Not right now. Okay. Different topic. But I'll tell you one other thing they point out. Let's say for the Ashkenazim, let's say I have all apple juice. There's zero water in it. All apple juice. So there is a shita out there that thinks even the Ashkenazim would think that would be mizonos. If it's all apple juice, all whatever is replacing water. But most poskim assume if it looks like bread, if it tastes like bread, it's hamotzi. And that's how most of us assume. And therefore, there is no mizonos bread for us. If it's cake, that's a different story. That's the discussion of mizonos bread. What about unwrapped food? Another discussion. You come back to your seat and you find that someone unwrapped it. Are you allowed to rely on that food is good? Can you eat it? That's why they serve all the food wrapped and all the tape, you know, busy trying to slam it with it. It's impossible because you have, like, the plasticware is inside the plastic. So you can't get the knife out to open up the plastic. So you take out your pen or your key and the guy next to you thinks you're crazy. So you finally opened it up. What happens if you go to wash, because it's a mozi, and you come back and your friendly guy next to you met over the past few hours opened up your plate for you. You're allowed to eat that. There's halacha that when it comes to... kosher food, comes to wine, comes to meat, comes to all kosher food, it has to come wrapped. Are you allowed to eat it if it's unwrapped? This happens all the time if you're going to a business event and they're very nice and accommodate you and they get your plastic wrapped from Abigail's and then they serve it all for you and it's on the table and then your thing is like, it says Abigail's but it's wide open now and everything's exposed now. It doesn't have the seal on it. Are you allowed to eat it at that point? So this is a question that's asked all the time by first year interns. So what's the answer? So we take a look at number 3. The Shulchan Aruch writes as follows. He says, Kevin Sheikhzim Mukurai, if it was sealed properly, Shnei Chosmos, it needs 2 seals. That's another discussion of what accomplishes 2 seals. Bidvarm Shetzarach Shaim, there's certain halachas, certain foods that require a double seal. And echad bedvarim shedai beechad. There are certain foods that it's enough to have just one seal. So whatever the case is, two seals, one seal. Ein tzarich lachzer achrav lerosa. You don't have to chase after to inspect the seals. If you see there are seals on there, you have to check to make sure it was the original seals. You see two seals, that's enough. Aval im chazer al chos mavlo hakiro. If you recognize something and you see something looks different, something looks strange, then aser afilu aser shtei chosmos. Okay. Rama says, im dafka im hu davar sheish lo lachush shechlifo v'nena b'chalifin. Rama said, if you find that the seals have been tampered with, and we should be concerned that maybe there's not kosher food there. Rama says, there's only a chashash if you think that the person who switched it is trying to gain something from it. He's trying to switch your better quality meat with his low quality meat. But there's nothing to be gained from the person who opened the seal. Rama says there is no concern. So when you're going to an event and they're very nice and they're opening up. When I went to PwC, I had this question. I was working at PwC, it was in the summer, and they had a whole spread, and there was my kosher Abigail's on the side. It was all opened up. All the seals were open. But since I know the HR person is not trying to get me, not trying to trick me, not trying to switch my meat with something else, the lach is, says their ma, you're allowed to eat that food. There's nothing to gain from it. Now, it comes to wine. He says wine's a different story. So what about on the plane? You met this nice person on the plane. And they opened up the seal for you. They opened up. Are you allowed to eat that food? L'chora, they're not out to get you. They're not trying to switch the meat. But there's a famous story that they say about a person that went to wash. He came back. He found that it was unwrapped. And he looked at it and he said, no, thank you. He gave it back. And the guy next to him says to him, why aren't you eating the food? So he says, there's a halacha that if things are, the seal is removed, we don't trust it. And the guy next to him says, it's impressive of you, the halacha of the Torah, because I actually switched the meat because I wanted to taste what your kosher meat tasted like. So he switched it. So he relied on this. So I would find it very weird if the guy next to me opened up my my plane. Even if you made friends with him the past few hours on the plane, I wouldn't eat that food. He might not be out there to get you or to gain anything from this, but it would be very strange if he put his fingers in my food or spit into my food. I wouldn't forget the halacha. Mitzad the cleanliness, the weirdness of it, I would not touch it. So that's the halacha with regards to food being sealed. Let's talk about two last halachas relating to food on the airplane, and that's with regards to washing hands. Wine is a different discussion. If wine is opened, then the halacha is if it's touched by a guy, it's always a problem, even though there may not be a chashash of it being tampered with.
So one time I had the stewardess came, and they showed me the package, it's double sealed, and then when they brought it out to me, she already opened it. She opened the seal. So could the, and then if I'm going to ask her, how did you warm it up, she might lie.
Right. Oh, they warm it up before, you're saying after they...
You know, first they show it to you that it's double sealed, then they take it back, they warm it up, let's say, for 20 minutes, and then they bring it back to you, and then you find the seal, they opened it up for you. So even though they opened it up for you beforehand or afterwards, maybe she's lying.
Right. My guess in terms of that particular question of it being warmed up, I don't know what it looks like in the microwaves or whatever they use. I wonder how dirty they are. It's probably pretty clean because all the food is, you know, on the plate very neatly. So I bet it's probably pretty neat warmer that they use, in which case there probably wouldn't be a problem even if they had, I wouldn't recommend this, but even if had they warmed it up open, there probably wouldn't be an issue anyway. That's my guess.
It has the non-kosher food in there as well.
Right, at the same time you're saying they do it?
So I guess
I don't know how it works. Oh, it could be. I assume there's like, you know, you put it in like a little slide and take it out. Maybe it's like a bigger oven. So I guess I don't know. I don't know. They don't warm it up open. So I don't know if it's serious. I'm not sure. Okay, fine. So let's get to the last two points about washing hands. So there's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that says that when a person enters into a bathroom, they have to wash the hands when leaving the bathroom. Which means that washing hands in a bathroom doesn't help, because whenever the bathroom itself is a place that's dirty. So if you have to wash hands whenever you leave a bathroom, so you certainly shouldn't wash hands in a bathroom itself. So how do you wash hands? So you could find the nice stewardess in the back to let you wash hands in the back sink. It's probably hard to accomplish. You don't want to be too annoying. Enough requests we're making anyways from the stewardess to request washing hands in their sink probably wouldn't be very, very nice. So the lach is as follows. It's quite simple. That nowadays, without going through the whole Shach Levitaria, we assume that our bathrooms, even a bathroom in a plane, does not have the same din as a bathroom back then. The basic kisa is back in the Gemara is that everything, all the waste was there in that same place. Here we have a sewer system, and even a plane, the waste goes down, so it does not have a din of a real bathroom. That being said, the Rav Moshe writes, in general, one should avoid washing hands in bathrooms, just to be machmir. We should treat it as much as we can as a real bathroom, but at the same time, if a person's stuck in a situation, then you certainly can rely on washing hands in a bathroom. I know this is a situation, without giving any details away, on Hilchos Shabbos. Hilchos Shabbos, there's a question whether or not you could use, you know, the faucets that have one faucet only. Many faucets have hot or cold? Cold, hot. Mm-hmm. But if it's
one downstairs.
Yes, I'm not sure if it's hot to that one. So that's a Shiloh whether you could be using those, because when you turn on the cold side even, so there might be some hot water that comes through even the cold side. And there's a chashash, maybe you move the hot side. So because of questions of halacha and using hot water on Shabbos, let's say you have the option of using the sink in the kitchen, which has only one, where the hot and cold are together, or should you wash in the bathroom, which has two separate faucets? So I know a person who, I don't know if I didn't ask him about this, but I just observed that he preferred to, a person who knows, preferred to wash in the bathroom with the two different knobs than washing in the kitchen with one. So that's something to think about in general in your homes, whether you should have one or two of them. So one last, what? Yeah, I was told not, but either way, there's still a chashash that you could still turn it to the hot side, but I was thought maybe, I don't know the plumbing of it. I was just told this way, but you know.
A washing cup, like, so you don't have one on the plane. Can you use a disposable one?
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, it's better to use a harder plastic, a more serious kli, but if not, you could certainly rely on a plastic one. We'll finish with one last halacha. What about Mayim Achronim? So Mayim Achronim, the Shulchan Aruch writes, that based on the Gemara, Mayim Achronim is a chova, and there's a requirement to wash. So, seemingly, a person should go ahead and wash before benching. That's halacha in general. And the Shulchan Aruch, at the very end of the siman, he writes, as a yesh omer, there are those who hold that yesh she'ein nogin lito mayim achronim, there are those who don't, and therefore it's a machlokas. So, there are some who paskin bismanas and not to wash hands. The Mishnah Berurah, at the end, he writes that even though there are those who are not makbid, he quotes from the Gra and the Magen Avraham, that's still a very good idea. Based on Kabbalah, there's a big inner of Mayim Achronim, even though the Gemara tells us the reason why we have Mayim Achronim is because of Melech Sodomis. There's a certain salt from Sodom that could cause someone to become blind. So at a chashash for that, we have to wash hands. But even though that's the case, we know many times based on Kabbalah, even though the Gemara gives us a reason in Nigla, there's always a hidden reason there as well. So the Gemara and the Magen Avraham both refer to some reason al pi Kabbalah why one should wash Mayim Achronim. So what to do on a plane? So lechar, one should wash Mayim Achronim on a plane. But it may depend also on the sensitivity of where you're sitting on the plane. If you're a guy in the aisle or the guy on the window seat. So the window seat, so you go out to wash hands first, you ignore the guy once. And then 15 minutes later, you ignore the guy a second time. So I'm not sure if you want to be that annoying guy doing the Mayim Achronim. If you're sitting in the first class like that guy with a coffee mug, you're not bothering anyone. There's plenty of room for you to walk back and forth. If you're stuck in the window seat, I wouldn't. I wash Mayim Achronim whenever I can. But if I'm sitting on the window seat, if I go out to wash my hands for Amotzi, I'm not going to wash Mayim Achronim to bother the guy a second time. If I'm in the aisle seat, so then I don't mind going back yet a second time to wash Mayim Achronim. Okay, so we'll stop here. And next week, Emir Hashem will continue with these topics on the airplane. Yes.
Don't wash my macaroni.